Hi there, my name is Paula McLean and I'm delighted to guest host this episode of More Than the Lump for Aisling. Back in season one, I came into the studio to tell my story about being diagnosed with stage two invasive breast cancer at the age of just 42. I spoke to Aisling about the decision at the time to have the lump that I found just before a friend's wedding with my three young girls checked out. I talked about my subsequent treatment journey and the impact of my family, including my husband and my three lovely girls. During the course of that particular episode, I touched on an emotional scars that remain with me to this day, over 11 years later. And so when Aisling asked me to come back in to host an episode with other women who have travelled this road and to talk a little bit more about the psychological impact, I couldn't refuse. If by sharing my experience can help other women to feel they are not alone in their fears, then I am more than happy to be involved. To be diagnosed with breast cancer is traumatic. It brings worries and anxieties that, to be honest, women who haven't been impacted simply never know or fully understand. In this episode, I hope to unravel some of those psychological issues, to unpack them and talk openly and honestly about how it feels, our worries and our anxieties. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined for this discussion by Lisa Convey, a fellow breast cancer survivor who I met many years ago in a boxing ring in Bray, County Wicklow. It was a boxing ring and we were there for the totally fabulous Katie Taylor, who was lending her support to Breast Cancer Ireland at the time as part of a launch of a self-check video encouraging women to lend their hands to protect them. We had a great day, Lisa, didn't we?
Oh, we did. A fantastic day. It was an experience.
It was so much fun. We were joined by the ever vivacious Anne Elville and our beloved Emma Hannigan, who sadly passed away in 2018. We all still miss Emma in our lives, but it was always good to remember Emma and her fun, her laughter and the divilment we all had when we met up, isn't it?
Yeah, good fun.
We had a good laugh that day for sure. Also joining me today in studio is Lynn Buckley. He was diagnosed in 2017. Like myself and Lisa, Lynn is a mum, a wife, a daughter, a friend, a work colleague, and she has much to say about navigating our collective way through this disease. Ladies, you are both very welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
I'm going to start with you, Lynn, because while we only met each other this morning for a lovely coffee, your diagnosis is the most recent. Lynn, would you mind taking us through your story and how you found out you had breast cancer?
I will indeed. Thanks, Paula. So I was living in Salins. I was 33 years old at the time. I found a lump in my left breast. And I, at the time, I had two little girls. One was coming up on three, one was coming up on one, and I was 16 weeks pregnant as well. So I brought the lump to my pregnancy consultant, and he referred me on, thinking, okay, maybe this is just a cyst. The following week, I had an appointment and was straight in for a mammogram and an ultrasound. So afterwards, they did a biopsy and I had to wait 3 days to get the results. And those 3 days were the worst 3 days ever. I went back to work as a teacher and put my head down and just got through the next couple of days knowing I had breast cancer, and went back on the Friday to be told I had stage one breast cancer. The following week, I had a lumpectomy and lymph gland clearance, and the results that came back that I actually had a tumour in my lymph gland as well. So it put me to stage three and the cancer was triple negative, so quite aggressive breast cancer. I started chemo a couple of weeks later, all the while pregnant, and I did half my chemo pregnant, stopped, had a break of 2 weeks to get my bloods right so I could deliver my baby boy, Adam. And 2 weeks later, he was delivered at 36 weeks, and 2 weeks later, I was back to chemo. I did another 10 weeks of chemo, and I needed more surgery because the lumpectomy didn't clear margins. So I had another three surgeries to try and clear margins, and I ended up needing a mastectomy. After that, then, I had 5 weeks of radium, and that kind of finished the initial treatment. I did a lot of genetic testing as well. They all came back negative, but we made the decision to have a full hysterectomy done, again, as a precaution. We're speaking to some consultants and getting advice from them. I decided to go and have a full hysterectomy done, again, to reduce more risk. So at the moment, I'm currently 5 years cancer free as of last week, and doing well so far, thank God.
Lynn, so, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Lynn, I'm sitting here listening to your story, and every piece of me is like, you've been through so much.
Yeah.
And you're incredibly brave, and you're amazing. And
thanks.
You're pregnant with your gorgeous baby.
Yeah. Oh, it was a frightening, absolutely frightening time. Just worried so much for him and for his health. And even to the day he was born, he was whipped off for cord bloods, and he was in NICU for a while, and he ended up getting jaundiced. And, you know, just... He's five now, and he... It still bothers me that something is going to happen to him, and it'll be my fault because I had chemo, you know, but he's perfectly healthy, you know, and he's great, a great kid.
To me, Lynn, you are a superhero.
Amazing.
I've been through my own story, and it's absolutely what you've been through is unbelievable. Like a couple of things you touched on there, like those few days when you're waiting for that diagnosis, that is so difficult. I know that's a difficult part, but you were pregnant.
Yeah.
And so you were not only thinking about yourself,
yeah,
and your fear, but you were carrying this.
Yeah. And to be honest, I don't even think it was thinking about myself. It was thinking about the baby I was pregnant with, my two little girls at home, and, you know, how am I going to do this? How am I going to have treatment? You know, and it was an awful time, an awful worry.
When you look back now at that time, how did you think you got through it?
I'm not sure, to be honest. You know, I have an amazing husband that has just been there through everything. There's things he's helped me with and done for me that no husband should ever have to do with their, you know, to their wife. You know, shave your head and the likes of it. And I just put the head down and one foot in front of the other. My mum and dad were absolutely fantastic as well. And, you know, friends gathered around. And I think I just was in that I need to fight mode. And I think it was nearly easier on me just because I knew my path. Everyone else was scrambling around me with the worry of it, you know. It was day by day, one foot in front of the other.
That's incredible, Lynn. So, what is your little baby's name? You're 5 years
old now.
Adam. So, and he's doing great, and you're delighted.
He's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, no, he's great.
That's fantastic.
He's very healthy, thank God.
How are you now?
I'm good. Still have regular checks, few hiccups along the way, but thank God I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I don't think I'll ever stop worrying about the pain in your head or the pain in your hip or, you know, any kind of symptoms or side effects. I don't think that'll ever go away, but as of this moment, I'm well. So we'll take the little win, you know.
I'm absolutely amazing. Amazing, Lynn. And Lisa, you have an incredible story also to tell us.
Yeah, as you know, we met 10 years ago.
Yes.
I'm 11 years now since my diagnosis. Like that, I was 36 years old. I had lost my mum. She was 44. She passed away from breast cancer. So it was always something from the age of 17 that was part of my life, you know. Right. But I'd put it to the, you know, the side and kind of, you know, got on with life. And so what happened with me was, I think I kind of, my brother got sick in 2009. He had gastric cancer, he was 39. And I think with going up and down to visit him and stuff in Galway, I just found that, you know, I just wanted to be there for him. So between that and the three kids and with work, I probably should have noticed that, you know, I was getting pains in my right breast and stuff like that, but I kind of put it to the back burner. Anytime I would have gone to the doctor, you know, it would have been, maybe you're just anxious because your mum or your brother. But anyway, it came to show that I was, on the 7th of March 2011, I was driving out home, and that was the date of my mum's anniversary. And I just got this sharp pain in my breast. And I said, look, I've had enough. I'm going back to the doctor with this. So I went back to the doctor, and they said, oh, do you know, I think you're being a little bit anxious. We will refer you because of the family history, but maybe you're a little bit anxious. So they sent me home with something just to relax me. And that was fine. I was seen 7 weeks later in Galway. And the doctor I met up there, they did a mammogram, which was clear. So they brought me in to sit down and talk to me. She checked me and said, you're a young woman, up you go, you're fine. Do you know what I mean? Don't be worrying. And they said, we're going to send you down for an ultrasound just in case, do you know, because of the family history. So I don't know what happened and I don't know who spotted what that day. But I got as far as Tuam, got a phone call to go over to Merlin Park to have an MRI. And that MRI showed up two tumours in my right breast. So it was like all systems go from then. They did a biopsy. They checked my nodes. There was all a few days in between of worry. The three kids were at home. I'm not a person that can kind of hide my... They had said, you know, go out, sit in the car. You have breast cancer. Do you know, turn off your phone. Don't talk to anybody, do you know, unless you feel ready. But of course, when I went home, my 10-year-old Caitlin, my middle child, met me in the bathroom and she goes, Mom, there's something going on. I can feel it. And so, like they said, if they ask, tell them. So I told her. And that was fine. It was in my lymph nodes and everything. So it was straight into 4 months of chemo. Like that, losing the hair. And my son took that very bad. My son's teacher that year, actually, Ethan was 6, coming on 7 at the time. He was 7, coming on 7, yeah, I think. Sorry now, it's just so long ago.
Not at all.
And she said she never seen a child change as much as him that year. So for me, to be honest with you, what got me through everything was my husband, my kids. I didn't have my mum. My dad was very sick at the time as well. So I used to have chemo and then go home to dad, shower him. Eventually dad had to go into a nursing home. But anyway, beyond that, I was still in treatment, met great friends through treatment, lost great friends through treatment. And we used to use our chemo day as a dress-up day. So we'd go in done up to the nines.
Like. I love
it. So I'd be going in, but like you'd be fabulous. You'd have your makeup on and everything. And then 10 minutes later, you were great. You were just like, oh God. But look, it was great. It wasn't great, but like we made great
most
of
it.
Bad situation. Yeah. And anyway, that was done. We had our little tips of when you're going for chemo, wear your gloves and everything because it was cold. So you wouldn't be sent away. They'd get your bloods and the whole shebang. So that was fine. So then after I had the chemo, they checked the tumours. I had a moderate response to chemo and it was still in my lymph nodes. So I had to have a radical mastectomy and my lymph nodes removed. And I had immediate lat dorsi reconstruction. For me, that was important. I didn't want an implant. Everyone's story is different. My story was that at 17, I used to go up and down on the train with my mum to St. Luke's and she had a mastectomy. And to me, this is years and years ago. Things have moved on.
Yeah.
But that was the scar I had in my head.
Yeah.
So I wanted the immediate reconstruction if they could. Once the tumours were gone, that's all I wanted. So that took a while to recover. All the while, I just wanted to bring the kids away. The kids wanted to make life. Because I thought, because Mum and Patrick, 44 and 39, had passed, that I was going to be next. And I was just going, I'm not ready. I love you, but I'm not ready to meet you. And that's that. So that was fine. Then it took me a while to recover from that. That was a long surgery. Painful. I remember my friend and my sister-in-law just sitting on the chair beside me at home and the pillows propped up. But you know something? I forget that pain now. At the time, it was the worst thing in the world. Now I'm like, it's like when you have your baby.
Childbirth, yeah.
Like, you know, three different births, but traumatic, a couple of them. But like you forget it when you hold that. So I kind of let that, you know, go. Then it was into radiotherapy. My husband was with me all the way. We used to make sandwiches on the top of the car in Ballandine and then come back and pick the kids up from school. And it was just to be back in time to pick them up from school. I used to work my radiotherapy appointments around that. So that was my year of active treatment. Then I had to have the genetic test in Crumlin. So I said to them, look, I just couldn't do anymore. I said, I can't go up and get the results. Can you please give me the results over the phone? When they rang to say, you know, we have your results, can you come up? I said, I can take anything now at this stage. Just tell me. I'll never forget, I was standing upstairs in the bedroom and they told me I was BRCA1 positive. So I couldn't have missed, you know, I was going to get breast cancer. So straight away they were on it and and I was brought in to have my womb and ovaries removed, and thankfully I had my three children at that stage, and they removed my womb and ovaries, and then 12 weeks after that they did a mastectomy on my left breast. But my whole thing, and what really broke my heart through the whole thing, was that my daughters would have had to be tested, and the fact that I tested positive meant that all my family could get tested. So thankfully my sister was negative. My daughter, when she turned 18, got tested. She's negative.
Fantastic.
And my middle girl, Caitlin, who's 22 next week, is negative as well.
Oh, amazing.
So Ethan was 18 a couple of weeks ago, and he'll have to get tested eventually. But my children and my husband and my friends got me family through a tough 2 years.
Very, very tough.
That stays with you, and you're very different after it. But you're a good kind of different.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And Lisa, you know, when you're listening to you, and I know your story because you've told me it, but you told me it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And we met for a photo shoot with Katie Taylor. Yeah. I had never met you before. And I suppose we're both in a very different place than we are now. We were diagnosed the same year. It was 2011.
2011,
so, and I remember driving you back to Dublin. And we just had a connection, and we cried, and we talked, and you've been on my mind all the time, and we've kept in touch on social media and different stuff. And talking to you now, and it's 10 years later, how are you now? How do you feel now about looking back and all of that?
No, I'm, God, very proud of myself, very proud of my family. There's nothing you could throw at us now. I know the people that are with me now are real, my people.
Who matter,
do you know? And all I want now is for women that are going through, like, I wish I had me when I was going through. I had people that I knew had gone on the journey before me, but I don't, they were brilliant, but I don't know how to word it. I just wish I could have heard me, and I would have known then I can get through anything, because there was just a lot of little extras thrown in to get through that I didn't know the people
had. It's amazing
had.
What a fighter you can be when you have no other option.
I really do feel it's so important to tell the story, because it makes somebody else's diagnosis and story a little bit less scary, and a little bit, and you know, I remember actually for me, I didn't know anybody at the time except Kylie Minogue. I remember like googling her and looking at her and through her stages and going, okay, I can do this. And now I've met so many incredible people who have been through this journey, and unbelievably brave women, and it's definitely a stronger place to be, but at the time I didn't. And I agree with you, it's so important to do it, and it helps other people so much. Today, when we talked to Karen, talked to Ashley and stuff, what we wanted to kind of talk about was your 5 years and your 11 years, and just where we are now in terms of how we feel. And I suppose, for me, if I'm being very honest, for those few years after it, I lived in huge fear. You know, I think if I could have become best friends with my oncologist, I would have, you know, if I could have got into her every single day, I would have hung on every word that she said. I kind of wanted her to tell me that I was, you know, going to live to a very old person, because somewhere in deep in my heart I just wasn't so sure about that. And my own thoughts, you know, get up in the middle of the night to, you know, go to the bathroom, whatever, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and all the babies and sleep in the house and everything. And I used to, you know, wish that I would get to see them grow up, because you don't know that, that self confidence that in your body, in life, just shifts, doesn't it? It changes. And 11 years later, I'm a much stronger person, and I feel very lucky and very grateful, but it still sits with me. I feel I am a different person in some ways, I wish more than anything it never happened. But in some other ways, I feel it's like a superpower to a degree, because I definitely don't sweat the small stuff.
No.
And if I do, I kind of take a step back a bit and I go, actually, that's not actually
important.
That's actually not important.
Yeah.
And one thing I've thought about, you know, I do, some parts of it do make me really think about life. Would I be as strong as I am now if I hadn't been through it? Would my family be different? Would my relationships with my kids and family and everybody have been different? Probably there were those couple of years that I don't remember a huge amount of it, because you're in survival mode, really, even though the kids were so small, and you're doing your best to look after it.
And when you're in active treatment, you know, you kind of have treatment keeping you going. Like, I remember finishing chemo and walking out the door bawling, crying. Like, I don't want to leave you. And they're like, this is a good thing, your chemo is finished.
It's like in free fall.
Yeah, and you're kind of put out. And then I remember finishing radium. And I remember meeting a lovely lady that was finished as well. And she said, my mother told me something when you're finished treatment. And this always stuck with me. She said, it's nearly like you come out of the tumble dryer. Because she was like, watch yourself now after this. Because just because the treatment is finished doesn't mean everything's okay, you know. And she said, it's like you come out, nearly come out of the tumble dryer, you know, where you kind of have to, you have to be spun around and now you need to straighten yourself out.
Yeah,
and she said, that takes a long while. And it always stuck with me, because you couldn't describe it better, really, you know.
It's the hardest, I think, after.
Yeah.
Because you feel like your safety net is gone.
And people leave you a little as well, because they think, okay, well, your treatment is done, you're okay. And then I find, you know, that was the hardest part. It was, you know, the years after it are what are hardest, you know?
Part. And, you know, I really thought about that a lot as well after that. And the people who love you, this I feel, wish you well and want you to be well. And it's very hard then to keep having that conversation going, because you love them, your husband, your parents, your kids. You kind of go, I'm doing great. I'm brilliant and I'm super and I'm finished treatments and I'm in, I feel $1 million and my hair is growing back. But deep in your heart, that's not how you feel at all.
How did you
deal with that?
I had panic attacks. I had nightmares. I would break down in the shower crying when I was by myself. I'd hear any story, sad story of someone passing away with cancer, and I was no more good. And I went and I saw a counsellor, you know, fairly soon after my treatment finished, but I wasn't ready, it didn't work. I didn't gel with them because I think it was too soon. I did it about a year later and I don't think I was in the right headspace. And I did it about maybe 15, 18 months ago, and actually it was great. And I've kind of, I learned to leave it out and to accept what happened to me. And I think that was the biggest thing, accepting it. You still don't like it that happened to me,
of course.
But you know, I've accepted it, and I think I've dealt with it, and it's made me a lot stronger. And as I said, I don't sweat the small stuff. I'm not around people that don't, you know.
You kind of cut out.
You do. You cut out that drama, and you just don't need that, you know. And I think it has made me way stronger as a person, you know. My main priority is my family, my kids, making memories with them. And just enjoying life, making the most of it, you know. And my nightmare all the time was, my daughter was only 3 when I was diagnosed, and she was starting school the following year, and it was, am I going to see her even start school? Never mind my baby start walking or anything, you know. Will I see her start school, you know? Now she's in 3rd class, you know. So it's great.
Yeah. And I completely and 100% get you and get that feeling. And I think we're fantastic. I think we have to say that. You know, because, you know, it's, I remember hearing somebody said this sentence to me and it stuck at me, for those who have had to fight for it, life has a flavour the privileged will never know.
Oh, I like
and
that.
It stuck with me and I loved it, and I remember writing it down and thinking, that's definitely,
appreciate your life,
that's definitely me, you know.
And enjoy all the milestones, like,
With
me it was always like, you know, with the kids, the Holy Communion, then I wanted to see them have their confirmation, then I wanted to see them graduate, and then my daughter went to college, she's a teacher now, she got engaged just before Christmas.
Oh, amazing.
My middle girl's in University of Limerick, doing what she wants to do, and my son is in Leaving Cert now, and my husband's in a good place, we're great, and it was hard. Now, I have to say hard, and you hit a lot of, you know, bumps in the road, but by God,
setbacks,
my husband and my family got me through. and myself.
Yeah, I think it could make or break everything. A lot of people, you know, that impact of the treatment and the, you know, the moods and the ups and the downs and the, you know.
100% make or break you.
Yeah. So I think, I know I'm very lucky to have the support I have around me and so the fantastic husband and family I have, you know. So
blessed.
Very appreciative for that, yeah.
And then do you talk about it much to your husband? And
I'd be a bit of a talker, so yeah, as I said, like, I would be very open about it, and, you know, if anyone asked me, I would talk about it, and more so to kind of, you know, try and share a story for me to kind of be able to talk about it, and for maybe people have something in the back of their minds where they're worried, or, you know, friends have come to me before, you know, I think I have a pain, and I'm like, you know, go straight, get it checked. It's good to talk about it, but I do think what you said a while ago, it does get to a stage where you're nearly kind of over talking about it, and people want you to be well, and I would still bottle a lot up, and I'd find my own way of dealing with it, you know, because there's only so much people can listen to you, I suppose, saying the same thing, you know. But I do have a great support network around me, and it is good to talk about it.
Yeah, Lisa, just picking up on that point there, so, you know, Lynn is 5 years and you would be 10 years, and I don't know if it's a process, but certainly you do start to feel a little bit, you know, stronger as the years go along, a little bit more confident, I think, in that, you know, it may not come back, because we've all googled it, we know it's a dangerous disease, we've lost beautiful friends to it, and my heart skips a beat when I hear of a mum who has, you know, is going to leave her children behind, and you know, it breaks my heart, and so it's very close to us, and it hurts when that happens. And just going back to touch on that bit about people wishing you to be well, and in a very lovely way, it becomes harder to talk about it. I would honestly say I don't talk about it to my friends and family anymore, other than if I'm meeting a friend who has been through it, or somebody who's been diagnosed, and then I'm there for them. But I don't really feel that it's something that not that I'm guilty talking about it. I feel I'm lucky. I'm grateful. I'm here. I feel that it's before, even though inside I haven't changed how I feel about it.
Yeah.
How is that for you?
Well, I think sometimes you just feel like you're, you know, maybe harping on a bit about it, like, but, you know, I like to talk about it, because I think every time I open my mouth and talk about it, that I'm helping somebody.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, if I can sprinkle a little bit of goodness or help to anyone. I'm from a small town in Ballina, County Mayo. There's women all ends of the country being diagnosed. There's a lot of women in Ballina being diagnosed, and I hope they look at me and go, oh, please God, that will be me in 10 years, and I just want to be a symbol of hope for them. And it's a small town, people know what I've been through. I'm there to talk to anybody that wants, you know, to listen. If there's somebody that doesn't want to hear my story, that's their choice.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's fine. Some people aren't ready, some people aren't able. That's okay, 100%. All I can be is be me.
Yeah.
And if that helps somebody, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So Lynn, you spoke about, and I think it was very interesting that you went to speak with somebody to help, because it is a very difficult time, and you're alone in your own thoughts so many times, you know, in the house and going for a walk, or going from the supermarket to the car, and something might hit you, or you might think about something, or a memory might come up on your phone or something, and it can be a very lonely time. And as time goes on, I personally feel sometimes it's harder to talk to the people that are very close to you about it, because other parts of life take over and other things happen, and it's kind of, that was ages ago, and you're well now, and you're doing great, and you look amazing.
Thanks.
And so how is that for you? So do you feel that you can still talk, like, deeply and openly to the closest to you, like your husband and your close friends and things like that?
I honestly do think I could tell my husband anything, and he would support me. But I think it's my own feeling on it, where I bury things a bit more.
Okay.
And I can honestly say 5 years on, I still think about this every day. Every little ache, every little pain affects me. And any little story that I come across, you know, can kind of twig something, twig an emotion where, you know, it really upsets me for, you know, where someone else wouldn't understand at all what's actually wrong with me, you know. But I do think I can have the conversation. I think it's me that's holding myself back because I just feel I am well. I've put them through enough, and it's the guilt of that as well. The guilt of what I did to my family, what I did to my husband, what I did to my mum and dad. You know, my dad wouldn't often show a lot of emotion. And I remember before Adam was born, my husband and my friend organised a little baby shower just to perk me up. And I remember my aunt, Dennis's aunt, call her my aunt too, my auntie Maura, asking my dad, you know, you must have got an awful shock. And my dad being really upset answering. And I would have never have seen that from my dad. And it kind of drilled home what effect it was having on everyone else as well. So I suppose I've already put them through this. And to this day, I'm still ringing my parents going, oh, I'm going for a scan here because of pain in my head, you know, and that worry is still with them. So I suppose I don't like burden them where I feel I can deal with things myself. So I do try and deal with a lot myself, but I can honestly say at the stage I'm at, there's still not a day goes by where I'm not worried about something, or, you know, the memory doesn't come back to me, or something doesn't upset me, or something that I kind of, and it usually is, you know, during the night when you're kind of awake or you have a shower or you're gone for a walk, or you just hear a story or somebody says something that twigs a memory. Or somebody new has been diagnosed, you know, that stays at me. But I know in my heart and soul I can absolutely turn to them and I can have an honest conversation. I feel I do hold myself back a bit now, though, because of what I have actually put them through already, you know.
Like, it's actually incredible to hear you say this because, you know, I think somewhere along the way I thought I was the only one.
And when you're in it, you can't see anything else. So you're just too busy, you know.
And everything that you've just said is how I feel and how I have felt over the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah. It's good to know that's normal, though. You know, it's good to know it's normal.
And I think that women and we're so strong, and we always portray that strong. You care about everybody else, and you said what you did to your family, but like you didn't do anything, you know.
Yeah, and I know. I wouldn't have asked for it. That's for sure. You know,
because they wish you well. You want to be well for them, and you spoke about your dad, and you brought me back to a moment that I haven't talked about in ages. That I wore my wig out all the time, but in the house it was too warm and it was uncomfortable, so I didn't. And my kids were used to it. I used to have my headscarf on, but one particular day I was just at the counter in the house, and I think it was coming to my last chemo, so I wasn't feeling brilliant. And my mum and dad called over, and I forgot for a second. My dad actually hadn't seen me like that. And he walked in and he kind of a smile, and he just rubbed my head. And I saw the pain in his eyes, and I just went, sugar, I should have put my wig on. I wasn't thinking, you know, because that's what we do, isn't it?
Yeah.
And another thing that you said there, and it really makes me think about something, those alone thoughts, and that really, you know, we get on with as women to do everything. It is important. I think we do need more emotional support and help after breast cancer, because nobody tells
the
you that this is
just around the age at night.
And you leave all your treatment and it's free fall. Yeah. That's how it, like, you know,
it's a very lonely place.
And it is. And I'm, you know, my breast surgeon passed away a year and a half ago, and I'm 10 years, and I remember the feeling going, oh my goodness, who's going to actually look out for me now? And so,
I had the same breast surgeon, heartbroken altogether. Heartbroken. Yeah. Just, it was like part of your family leaving you, you know, what am I going to do here now?
And I still feel it. And I feel like that he just had my back and he was actually keeping me well. And like, Lisa, you feel the same way. And like, we're 10 years, 11 years down a different road. And it's probably quite a lonely place, if I'm being really honest. Like,
it is
the world goes on around outside, and, you know, everything keeps spinning around, and the kids are well, and life is good, and everything's happy, but there's a piece of our hearts that are broken.
Yeah,
and
I think there always will be.
Always will be.
A little piece.
And I think maybe there's some need somewhere for, I don't think people are ever told this is going to happen, and you're going to feel like that 5, 6, 7 years later, that fear, that loneliness, that survival for your family, that, you know,
the absolute guilt, yeah,
and the guilt, everything. Yeah. It's, and I do think back of what of those couple of years, how different would they have been if it hadn't happened. And always glass half full, take the positive, and I do go back to the superpower I feel now, you know. Yeah. You're in a schoolyard or you're tough at something and somebody's getting into something, and sometimes I get sucked into it a little bit, and then you kind of go, ah, honestly, that is
nice. But you have to let yourself have those feelings as well, because you have to just let yourself feel. You know, you deserve to let yourself have the down days.
I think that's the superhero being a mother as well. Yeah. I think being a mother, you're just used to juggling it all. Yeah. The kids come first. Mm. You know, I know myself. I sort them, and then I have 5 minutes to sort myself. Yeah. You know, and it is the worry about them, and it's getting them sorted. And you put a lot kind of that guilt then that you've missed so much with them. And I know, like if I look at Adam's baby stage, I can't remember the first year of his life, really. I just remember fighting with my husband, because it was like, I have fed the two girls every night shift, you are not taking over now. And we were fighting over where to put the bassinet in the room the first couple of nights. Yeah. So you need rest, you're in treatment. And I remember when he was asleep, like, you know, the baby was over next to him, and the very minute he started gurgling, I was up over, taking him over, fed him, burped him, changed him, back in the bassinet. And when he woke up in the morning, my husband said, he was great last night. And I was like, I fed him at 4 o'clock. So proud of myself that I was actually able to do that. But that guilt that, you know, I'm not going to be not able to feed my child, you know. I was probably dead the next day over it, but,
you know, overdrive.
It's, you just, as I think as a parent, I think that's being a parent in that situation and protecting my baby through half the pregnancy, through half the treatment and stuff as well. That pushed me on as well, you know, kind of, I have no other choice to get up in the morning. I have no other choice to go forward, because these kids are here relying on me, and I absolutely have to do it, you know.
And I did it probably, you know, in that whole few years afterwards and everything, I went completely cotton wool, my kids, my little girls, I need to see them grow up, I need to put everything into place, I need to make loads of memories, and you know, running every couple of times, you know, birthdays, anniversary, we go away for a weekend or something, and I can't explain it, it was like a fear, and I was like, okay, sounds great,
pack everything into
don't really want to leave the kids. And so it was, and a friend of mine said to me, he went for a walk one day and said, I'll take the kids. You should go away for a couple of nights, have a break. And something came to me and I said, you know, I don't want to miss a thing with the kids. I don't want to miss a day because I'm not sure how many of them I have. Mm-hmm. And that's 4 or 5 years later. Yeah. And I can't say I don't even still feel the same way. Mm-hmm. That's something I don't think I would have been like that. I think I probably would have been. I became probably a worrier in a worrier for time.
Yeah.
You know, I need to do. I need to do without this, because I don't know if I'm going to get to do that again.
Yeah, I was like that, but I kind of would have been a little bit like that with the kids, because when Mum passed away, my little sister was 4, and my brother was 10, so I was 17, and my two older brothers were 20. So I kind of would have always said, you know, I never want my kids to feel the way I felt. Like, I never want them, you know, because the home, the family was never the same again. And it was because of breast cancer. Like, so when I got it, like, I was like, do you know?
And Lisa,
so
that's kind of can you just describe that? Because I'd love to know that from myself. Like, so, and I'm sure other people listen to us, when you say it wasn't the same again.
Well, it just wasn't the same again without my mother, but that doesn't always have to, that can, it, and now it was because of breast cancer I lost my mum. But, you know, lots of people lose their mums, their dads, you know, but family life just was never the same again for us as a family. So I always said, when, you know, I have my children, that, you know, I wanted 3 before I was 30, because just in case anything ever happened, and it ended up happening when I was 36. So genetically, obviously, I bet myself up going, did I do something wrong? Did I, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. I did everything right. You know, so I had to kind of, you know, deal with my own emotions as well. And I suppose I wasn't, even 10 years ago, I was very vulnerable when we met the last time. And but now I'm definitely, I've dealt with a lot of demons, I suppose, that yeah. I had carried trauma from yeah, losing absolutely. My mum at such a young age yeah. and watching my siblings. Like, we had to have a fifth birthday party for my sister in the hospital when mum was dying. Her birthday was the 25th of March. Mum died on the 7th March. So we had to have one early for her. A pretend fifth birthday while mum was still there. So, like, all those traumas came back into my head when I got diagnosed, and Ethan was 6, 7, as I was like, I can't leave these kids. I can't leave them. I fight every breath. And I did.
You did.
And I'm still here.
You did.
It's and great. It is a trauma. Like, it's a great way of describing it. Trauma. Breast cancer is a trauma.
100%
trauma. The treatment is a trauma. The surgeries are trauma. You know, there's a lot to deal with there.
Yeah. And you can go months where you're okay, sorry, but you can go months where you're fine, and sometimes it mightn't enter, like, I know it enters in little ways in different, when you see people, but you could go months where you're like, grand, and it could be just one thing, like an ad on the telly, or it could be, you could be clearing out your wardrobe and find a scarf that you had, and, you know, it just could be, like, I know even after my dad died 5 years ago from a brain tumour, and, when I was clearing out the house, I found my mum's prosthesis. And I never grieved my mum because I was 17. By God, I didn't grieve my dad because I just knew he was ready. But by God, I grieved my mum in that house. I don't know how the neighbours didn't come in from the estate. I was roaring. But I just, do you know, we have to deal with so many emotions. Like, but my thing was always, there's always somebody somewhere going through and dealing with worse than you are, but you have to let yourself have your feelings.
But your journey is your journey, and it doesn't make it any...
It is your journey, you know, and everyone has their journey, and it's great that we're here to talk about it.
Tell the tale, yeah.
I often, one of my things would have been the Christmas decorations. I actually love Christmas, but that first year, putting the tree up, then putting the decorations back down, and I actually remember putting them all in particular ways because if I was or wasn't going to be able to do it the following year. And now it's still there. I hate it. You know, it's like, but it's much more of a confidence, and you're, you know, there are all these little small things in your life that nobody knows. And like, I've never told anybody that.
Yeah.
That I just, like, and I feel really easy, open and easy. That's it. I could sit here for the next, like, 2 hours. But there's definitely an aspect in it, I think, of like a post-traumatic stress, you know, it's kind of, you know, you do all of this stuff and you're, you know, you're willing yourself well and you're getting better and you're back out there and your hair starts growing back and, but that's it then. And then you have to, there's other stuff. And then a few years later, you know, you might have more surgery or do anything, and you probably don't even talk about that part because that's a couple of years on and nobody, it's not really something you talk about, but it's enormous to deal with. Like, it's huge.
Yeah, like your friends might go, why were you in Galway yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, I had to go, it's fine, it's nothing, I had to just go for, you know, but like, you could have been bawling that day because memories would have come back.
And it's that scanxiety, as they call it, you know, those even annual scans or, you know, okay, I've had to send for a brain scan. Mm. It's that worry, like that, you know, you're going to the hospital rattling, you know, kind of thinking, oh, good God, is it back?
Yeah.
And I think in 20 years' time, if I go for a scan, like, I don't think that's going to change, you know, that fear of what they're going to find, you know?
You know, I actually feel so empowered today speaking to the both of you. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because I honestly thought it was me and I was one of these people who just really worried about all of these things. But it's not. It is there. We are the same.
Thank you, Paula.
Thanks, Paula.
We have to do this again. We have to talk again. Yeah.
To be continued.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It was so good. And thank you so much, Lynn.
Thanks, Paula.
I actually think you are super women. I am so proud of both of you. Like, you're phenomenal. Can't wait to see you the next 10 years and 20 years. And
and you, Paula.
We'll all meet up in our, like, 80s and 90s and just have a glass of
little
champagne.
Old women.
Little old women, like, telling the story. Thank you so much.
Thanks a million, Paula.
Really enjoyed it. And it was very, extremely brave to do it, and I know that so many people out there are going to sit there and listen and go, wow, actually I feel like that.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by Care Plus Pharmacy. Care Plus is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. You can find your nearest Care Plus on careplus.ie or follow them on social media for daily health and wellness tips.